Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture. With your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection. Summer, the time when we head to the beach or the cottage with a pile of books or a loaded e-reader to catch up on the reading that we've been tending to do earlier in the year. Well, with me on the phone tonight from her Kitchener home office is author, editor, and book reviewer Susan Fish to talk about how to make the most of your summer reading. But before we get to our conversation with Susan, let's listen to All We Have from the Royal Foundry's Wherever We Go CD.
It's you and me now, living the quiet life. It's you and me now, we've been burned once or twice. Said, ooh, come a little closer.
Susan Fish. Good evening, Susan.
Hi there, Robert. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Very well.
Now, if you're like many of the writers that I know and I've interviewed over the past, your love for writing began initially as a love for reading. What are some of the first books that you remember reading?
I read Anne of Green Gables as a really young girl, and that's one of my favorite books still. Little Women, Judy Blume books. I remember reading those and getting quite an education through those. I read a lot. I remember reading Dick and Jane. That was one of the earliest ones I remember reading.
Now, what made you sort of, what gave you a love for reading? What was it that made you want to keep reading?
For me, it's always the story. And even today, I'll have a stack of books on my bedside table. And the reason there's a stack is that there's a bunch of nonfiction that I'm partway through. And then there'll be a fiction one on top. And I always devour the fiction one and then find another fiction book. So for me, and I shouldn't just say fiction. Memoir functions in the same way. Something that has a story to it, a storyline, something that starts once upon a time. And you got me with that.
Does it always have to end with happily ever after for you?
No, I don't particularly enjoy books that end in a bleak way, but I actually like books that end in an open-ended way, that there's possibilities for what's going to happen next. I think I prefer that to Happily Ever After a lot of the time.
Now, looking at the books that you read as a youth, as you're growing up, how did those books influence you either to become a writer or in what you're doing now as a writer?
Hard to say. I think it's one of the things that I would say when I started writing fiction, I gave up watching television because it was more pleasurable to be sort of a creator or co-creator in a world. And I think that in the same way that we lose ourselves if we're reading a book or watching a movie and we realize we almost wake up from it afterwards and say, oh, it's not the middle of winter. Oh, I've needed to use the washroom for an hour and I just ignored that kind of thing. I think even the process of writing is even more so engaging and involving and creative. And so I think that wanting that experience of being a reader but wanting to write, wanting something that wasn't out there, I think. So I think it's getting lost, knowing that feeling of getting lost in a story world and then discovering that I could have that even more engaging way. I think that's probably what appealed to me.
Well, when you're looking at that, I mean, and looking at creating that story world and that, and I know other writers have mentioned this, and a lot of times their stories and their writing started when they read something and they thought, this isn't very good, I can do better.
That has never happened to me. I've heard a lot of people say that, and that has. I mean, there are books that I have started that we could all do better than. We don't even have to be a writer to do better than that. But no, that has never been a motivation for me at all.
Well, looking at that and looking at where we're going with this, what are some of the books that you've read recently? What's been on your reading pile by your bed?
The book that I've read most recently that I loved is called Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel. I think that's going to be the best book I will read all year this year. I'm also, the other books that I've been working my way through, a couple of murder mystery series, one by, she's an American writer living in Venice, Donna Leon, and I read through actually her entire set of mysteries to date, and they are set in Venice, and I'm reading another series right now that is set in Sicily. So I'm doing some writing about Italy on my own, and so I'm kind of immersing myself in Italian books.
Now, you mentioned you often have some nonfiction books that you're looking at, too. What are some of the nonfiction books that you're reading?
I'm reading a book. I heard a talk recently about sort of the power of neighborhoods, so I've got the person who spoke, I bought his book on things people can do to engage with their neighbors and build stronger communities. So that's one thing. The other one I have is a series of profiles of female scientists, and there are 52 profiles of scientists that are women. So sort of taking us beyond Marie Curie, but to say that there's lots of other women who've contributed to science whose names haven't been well known. That's on my bedside table. I think that's all I can remember right now.
Now, are any of these for pleasure, or are these part of research you're doing for upcoming works?
The neighborhoods one is for my own interest, although it's a theme that comes into the writing that I do. And so I think that's sort of life and art mixed together. The women scientist one is one that I'm reviewing for the local paper for the Kitchener Record.
Now, looking at, when you're looking at the type of books you're reading, that do you have any guilty pleasure books, like ones that you know you really shouldn't read, but you just want to because they're there?
No, I don't think I do, actually. Maybe it's that I just don't feel guilt about my reading, but I think more way I would describe my reading is comfort reading, in the same way that people might have certain foods that are comfort foods. There are books that I go back to, and Anne of Green Gables is definitely one of them. That series is a book that, and I would say the Narnia series as well, they're ones that when I feel stressed, I go back to, and I find them quite comforting. But I think in terms of guilty pleasure, I guess I think of that as sort of being like junk food, and I think usually junk food tastes good going down, and then afterwards you feel kind of sick, and so I think anything that makes me feel kind of sick afterwards doesn't usually have a whole lot of appeal to me in reading it. I guess possibly reading murder mysteries could fit in that category, but I don't feel guilty about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just thinking there are a couple of times where I just sort of sit back, and I've had a number of things that I've been reading more work-related, or because I'm reviewing them, or I'm going to be interviewing the writer in that, and I just get to the point where I need a Tom Clancy book. I just need something that is mindless.
I don't think that that's one of the things I was thinking about in advance of today, was the idea of reading for pleasure. And I think that should actually be a key component in our reading, is that I've tried a number of times to read Anna Karenina, and I don't think it's ever going to happen for me, because it was just too hard slogging. And I think there are books that I don't know that we should read to impress anybody. I think we should read books that we enjoy and that we receive pleasure from. Mm-hmm. So I think, if you enjoy Tom Clancy, more power to you. You want to read something that is, not going to leave you feeling actually guilty or something that you shouldn't be reading. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I think, enjoy what you enjoy, whether that's fiction, nonfiction, romance, whatever it is.
Yeah. The one book I've tried a couple of times to do is Crime and Punishment, and more so because of the fact that, it's been said there are some great, huge, large themes that Dostoevsky approaches, but I just can't get past the stream of consciousness writing.
I read, in university, I read The Brothers Karamazov, and I probably wouldn't have finished it if it wasn't for a course, but I'm really glad that I did. So mm-hmm. I guess there is, as much as I say pleasure reading, I don't think that's necessarily always light reading. I think sometimes we can immerse ourselves in a book that's pretty heavy going and get a lot of pleasure out of that, too.
Yeah. Well, let's continue this conversation after a quick break, and then we'll be right back with our guest, Susan Fish, to talk about her summer reading pile and how you can get the most out of your summer reading. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM.
Twist and turn and pulling me closer, closer to my heart, closer to the grave. Whisper softly, sings a sweet melody, bleeds a kind of love that this young soul.
Arts Connection. You've been listening to In the Middle from the Royal Foundry's Wherever We Go CD. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with Susan Fish. Talking about earlier, we're talking about reading for pleasure and just reading and enjoying what you read. Do you have, and I know some people sort of, because of busyness of schedules and that, kind of put things off and then come into summer with a pile of books that they want to read. Do you have a summer reading pile that you're going through?
No, I don't actually. I've been talking with some people actually who are reading my book, and they talk about the fact that they, at the end of the day, can only read for a few minutes before they fall asleep, and they apologize for that. And I also know my husband is a high school teacher, and he does have a huge stack of books that he's just now that it's in the summer, he's starting to get to that. But I just, for me, I think it's something, I don't read during the day, but I probably make an hour in the evening available to reading and throughout the year. So my pile is constantly changing. I have a book that I picked up recently from a little library in my neighborhood because I had read a book by that same author. But I think I'm always just exploring and finding new things. And I try to keep the pile just for dusting purposes down to about four or five books at a time. And there are times where I'll just sort of work my way through and push through the nonfiction or push through the books that are a little harder or decide to give up on them is the other thing that I would say. I read something recently that said if you're under the age of 50, you should give a book 50 pages. And if it's really not grabbing you, you should give up, that life is too short to read a book that's just not speaking to you. And if you're over 50, you should subtract your age from 100, and that's how many pages you should read before you give up.
And that's interesting because as authors, we're often told that you need to catch people within, the first 10 pages?
Yeah, yeah, in the first chapter. And and sometimes it's the back of the book or the first page people will give up. So, mm-hmm. you want to make a promise early on that engages the reader that they'll keep reading.
Well, when you're doing your reading, and I'm thinking, you know, of your husband who has this summer reading list, I went through and I've got a page of books that I'm reading, there's a pile of books that I'm reading right now, everything from Conrad Black's Rise to Greatness, which is his epic tome of the history of Canada, to Blink by Malcolm Gladwell. Are you picking the books that you're reading because you specifically want to get something out of it? Or, as you say earlier, that you should simply read for pleasure?
It's a little bit of both. And are you talking specifically in the summertime or just generally?
Summertime and generally, but I think for most people, a lot of their reading is done in the summer. They've now got that time at the beach or at the cottage or something that they can actually just not be distracted and focus on reading, unless you've got young kids who are constantly asking you for things.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing that I heard people describe sort of a summer read or a beach read as a lighter book, kind of book, and that often that's when someone says summer reading, they mean sort of lighter fiction. And one of the definitions of it that I've heard is that it's a book that can be interrupted. And I think there is something to that there are sort of interruptions in the summertime where there's the sunlight gets a little too bright when you're reading it in the backyard or at the beach or something, and so you want a book that you don't have to sort of reorient yourself every single time. But I think one way that I read, I'm trying to read a little bit differently this summer, because I am a voracious reader, and I know not everybody is that throughout the year, but I am, so I don't have that stack to get through. What I'm actually doing is almost the opposite, and I'm slowing my reading down a bit, and particularly actually Bible reading. I'm doing just shorter chunks each day and reading it a little bit more thoughtfully and meditatively, and similarly, I'm doing some reading of poetry that way, so that I'm trying to memorize some poetry this summer, and just sort of letting those words sort of sink in the same way that you might savor like a couple of berries or something like that, rather than throwing everything together throughout the rest of the year. You might just enjoy a small bowl of strawberries. I'm trying to enjoy my reading that way, and I think that's a nice thing to be able to do in the summer too, is to slow down. So not necessarily to work your way through a list, because to me then that becomes like, what's the difference between that and your workload during the rest of the year? But to say, yeah, I'm gonna read this one book or this one poem over and over, or one psalm, and really, really savor it and let it soak in. I think that's a really valid way to be reading in the summer too.
Well, when you're looking for books yourself to read, what is it that you're looking for? Is it a particular author, a genre, a topic, you know, whether or not it's on the bestseller list? You know, what attracts you to a book, and sort of relate that to other people is what should they be looking for when they're trying to come up? Because some people come to this and they're kind of going, I don't know what to read.
Yeah, that's true. I think there's a whole bunch of different ways. I think that there are times where I'm looking online or I hear an interview on the radio, and I think that sounds fascinating. And so I will then make a point of making a note of that and looking for it at the library or on ABE Books, which is a great website for finding older books. So I think, for me, it does come down to fascination. I think if I pick something up and I think, wow, I would like to know more about that, or that sounds like a fascinating character, or something like that, I think that's probably the simplest way of explaining it. But I think it's a little bit like, the other thing I was thinking of is if you know, I really like this book. My dad, for example, likes Second World War spy kinds of novels, but he's worked his way through the main writers who are like that. And so one of the ways that I go looking, I've tried to help him find other books that fit into that genre. And I'll go into Amazon and type in the title or the author of the book that he likes. And at the lower down on the page, it will say, people who bought this book also bought or also liked. That is a really nice way of finding similar books. So if you found something that you like, Amazon, you don't even have to buy it through Amazon, but that's a way of seeing similar kinds of books. And I think librarians are also a really good source of that kind of thing. If you go in and you say, I really love this, I love Jane Austen, or I loved Tom Clancy, they'll say, oh, have you tried this author? Because they're a little bit similar to that. Booksellers, especially at small bookstores, are the same kind of thing. Sometimes people do judge a book by its cover and find something that just that appeals to them. So I think there's nothing wrong with sort of wandering around a bookstore and just seeing what appeals on that basis. But I think I come back to the idea that it needs to in some way capture your imagination. I usually have a few projects on the go personally and professionally. So sometimes I'm reading. I was writing something about Russia. So I read something about sort of the last Tsar of Russia, which was not light reading or anything like that, but gave me some good flavor for what I was writing. I don't know that we have to be stuck in a genre. I think that when I describe Station 11, it's sort of a science fiction-y kind of book. And I know there are people who say, oh, I don't read science fiction or I don't read young adult fiction. But I think if it's a well-told story, we might read more widely than we think we would.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I think that's happening too with books like that are when movies come out that are based on books, you know, people going through and picking that up. I know in my case they were shooting the miniseries version of Stephen King's 11/22/63. In my neighborhood, and so I'm not a huge Stephen King fan. I've read a bunch of his stuff when I was younger, but gotten away from it. I picked up that book, and it's not like a lot of his other horror stuff, but it's a really good story. It's that what if somebody stopped John F. Kennedy from being assassinated, and it goes from there, and it's really neat. But do you find yourself talking to people about books that have been turned into films or are being filmed, and going from there?
I think the conversation that I often have is trying to figure out films that are better than the book, and or that are as good as the book, and also the conversation is how does a film match up to your imagination, your experience of imagination? The children's book *Trumpet of the Swan* by E.B. White. I just had a conversation with someone about that last week, and she said it was an older adult, and she said it was her favorite book of all time. And it is a lovely, tender book, and it was made into a Disney movie years and years ago, which I watched with my kids. And it's a great Disney movie. It's a really fun Disney movie with trumpet, like a jazz trumpeting swan, and it's utterly different in feel from the book. And in my mind, it has sort of ruined the book for me because I think of the movie much more strongly. So I think that's the kind of conversation that I've had around, and I think the Lord of the Rings movies, I think that's one that a lot of people would agree got fairly close to what people thought of in a lot of ways as they read the book. So and for me, the movie A Room with a View is actually another example of a book that's really close, or a movie that came really close to at least what I imagined the book to be about.
Well, just looking at our time, it's slipping away. I need to take one final break, and then we'll finish up our conversation with author, editor, and book reviewer Susan Fish. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM.
When your face lights up and you're down in your heart, you see dawn, I know, and I don't see that spot. You turn away to try and ease the pain. It's easy to know who's the one to blame. Try to fix it, but you can't. To my heart, never knew there were things unsaid, but you were there from the start. You carry on your heavy loads, never could see how good it was, but you always knew the road. With my head stretched out and my face against the pain, let you know it's alright to fail. Be still in my
Back to Arts Connection. You will listen to Run Back from the Wherever We Go CD by the Royal Foundry. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to wrap up our conversation with Susan Fish. I mentioned a couple of times that you do review books as well. What's been on your review table for doing book reviews?
I've read a couple of really interesting books, and I think when I the way book reviews work, actually, is that the reviewers are sent a list of the books that have come in to the local paper, and we get to choose among the list, which to me is an amazing approach. And so sometimes books aren't reviewed because their blurb doesn't sound interesting to people. But I have found that I have read more widely than I would have because I'll take a chance on certain books. Again, it has to interest me. But the two books that that I've reviewed most recently, one is called Spinster, and it's a memoir of a woman who defends the idea of spinsterhood and says that really the idea that everyone must be married or that the end goal in life, especially for women, is to be married. She says that doesn't have to be the way the story goes. And so she talks from her own life about that. And the other book that I read is called Dietland. And I actually, I sought that one out when I heard about it. And it uses the story of Alice in Wonderland in some ways, of going down the rabbit hole into a different world to explore the diet and beauty industry. It's a novel, and quite fantastical novel, about a woman who is saving for a gastric bypass surgery when she's approached by a vigilante group of women who are trying to subvert both the diet and beauty industry. So it was really interesting. So, but both of those books were ones that were sort of challenging sort of the general story of what women's lives should be like. And I found them really interesting reading.
Wow. Well, Susan, thanks very much for your time tonight.
You are welcome. Happy reading.
Thank you for listening to Arts Connection today, and thank you to my guest, Susan Fish. And if you miss a broadcast or want to hear it again, look for archive programs on our website at www.selahministries.ca. And be sure to tune in next week for another look where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, a production of Selah Ministries, email robert@selahministries.ca. Follow us on Twitter at Selah13. Look for the Arts Connection page on Facebook or check the Arts Connection blog at rdaleleslie.wordpress.com. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.